Hello and welcome to the American Security Project's podcast on national security issues. Today we're joined by David Ferris, a reporter for Energy Wire and E&E Publishing. He's been there for about a year and a half and has spent about 15 years as a reporter. He's a leading reporter on energy issues, and we're pleased to be with him. He's just back from a trip to Cuba, and he's written a couple of important articles in Energy Wire, and we thought it would be interesting to discuss with him after ASP has released our recent report on cooperation with Cuba and how to build that, and we mentioned energy as a an area of cooperation. So we thought it'd be good to discuss with David. So David, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Andrew.
You know, so I was reading your articles here, and a couple of things came across to me. The first is, it seems like there's a dichotomy here. It seems like Cuba is eager to invest, and you talk to some people in the United States, and they're eager to work in Cuba, but I'm not sure if it's happening yet. What are you seeing so far? Who have you talked to about these sort of things?
Well, the remarkable thing about actually being in Cuba is the enthusiasm on the street for a relationship with the U.S. I mean, everywhere you go, literally every person I met, it gave me some variant on are we going to have a relationship? They've really pinned their hopes and aspirations and a change in their circumstances to this new opening. And as far as the leaders go, the reaction is more muted and cautious, but you still get a sense for the same enthusiasm. You're seeing a lot of meetings, a lot of announcements. Like, for example, Cuba's foreign interest section was able to open a bank account in the U.S. for the first time about a month ago. And so there's a quickening pace in the relationship and a lot of enthusiasm all around.
Interesting. And so you went to this conference, a conference on renewable energy. Did you see American companies there? Was there the beginnings of an American interest in there, or is this still too early yet?
Well, I was expecting to see some American representatives there, just based on the level of heightened interest I've heard from talking to some of those companies. But literally, I was the only American there, and I was expecting I might also see some Chinese representatives, because China's big in renewable energy, and China has had a trade relationship with Cuba. No one was there from China either. And so it was a somewhat technical conference, so it's possible that that wasn't where they wanted to go. But also, I think what it reflects is that for American companies really have their hands tied.
Sure.
As much as they might want that relationship, there are a lot of parts of the embargo that forbid them from getting involved. And I think they're waiting to see how whether President Obama's opening to Cuba is going to last through a change in administrations, and whether Congress is going to begin to dismantle the embargo regime. And until then, I think they're really interested, but they are sort of forced to wait on the sidelines.
Interesting. So, but meanwhile, do you get the sense that Cuba is opening up more generally, opening up to other countries, investment from other places? You mentioned China, but maybe European.
There were some European companies there, and I followed up with those companies after the conference, and I heard kind of the same thing. I think what's going on in the international realm is that there are dealing with Cuba in energy is going to involve a great deal of money and investment over years, and investors in general have been disappointed by their prior interactions with Cuba. Cuba has a track record of not honoring all of its debts, not allowing companies working in the country to make very much in the way of profit, maintaining rules that make employing people difficult. And so I think that they are also waiting to see how seriously the Cuban government is willing to engage with the international with international markets on the international markets rules.
Interesting. So this is not just about saying, hey, we're open, but it's also we're open for business and we're setting up the rules for investment that could actually attract businesses.
Right, right. And I definitely get the sense from the Cuban government that they are, this is a new chapter for them, and they really want this opening to happen. But there's so many decades of mistrust.
Yeah.
Not just from the American side, but from the whole global economic community,
mm-hmm.
that it's going to take some incremental steps before you start to see the deals that are going to be transforming energy in Cuba.
Interesting. Let's talk about kind of the market. They've talked about renewables. What sort of renewables would make sense? Would they look for, and do you think there's opportunities in kind of traditional energy as well?
Well, I was really surprised to hear the ambition of the renewable energy targets that I heard at this conference. They expect by 2020, or they expect, but they're projecting that by 2020, they want to be getting 14% of their electricity from biomass, 6% from wind, and 3% from solar.
Wow.
And that's from a pretty low baseline. And
yeah.
That, you know, in the American context, that would be kind of a laughable goal. Like we don't expect to be able to make those kind of moves that quickly.
Yeah.
But we have to remember that in Cuba, you know, a decade ago, they have what they call the energy revolution, which is where they basically, over the course of 1 year, switched out all of their incandescent light bulbs and switched them to compact fluorescence. And switched out
all
millions
of the light bulbs.
All
the light bulbs, not just
all the light bulbs. Not just the government, but in homes. Like every home was required to switch out its light bulbs, and millions of refrigerators were replaced with more efficient models from China. And this is a government that, you know, it's a command economy. So if the government is invested seriously enough in making something happen, they can do it.
Yeah.
And so there are reasons to believe that if Cuba really commits to it, that they can make those kind of targets happen. And there are, you know, there's a lot of renewable energy expertise in biomass and wind and solar in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be some pretty huge market opportunities there.
Yeah.
As far as conventional energy goes, the thing that's most top of conversation is natural gas. Because right now, almost all of Cuba's big power generation units are run on crude oil. And the low-hanging fruit for them is converting those to natural gas or simply shutting them all together and building new plants that run on natural gas. And they could reduce their carbon emissions at a stroke easily that way.
And this is... you know, one of these things in Cuba as the biggest Caribbean island, but this is a similar thing that is happening around the Caribbean, is these countries and islands that have grown dependent on imported fuel oil from Venezuela, now looking for something that's cleaner and potentially cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Cleaner and, you know, they obviously have a robust supply of natural gas from us. But
yeah.
It also isn't exclusively us. Like they could be working on the international market, and it would provide more of a security of supply than the overwhelming dependence on one supplier that Cuba has traditionally had.
Yeah, absolutely. You described in your article Cuba's energy system as one of the world's most outdated and dirty. I wonder if you can kind of describe what that looks like and feels like in Havana or in Cuba. You know, here in the United States, where we think of most people separate energy production from energy use. You know, you flip the switch and it turns on. You don't think about the pollution and all the other things that go on kind of a long way down the line. Do you notice the energy system in Cuba? You know, everybody knows about the 1950s Chevys and everything there.
One thing is it's really, I think in the U.S. we think of crude oil as a, it's crude.
Yeah.
You don't use it for end uses.
Right.
It becomes a refined product. And in Cuba, they take crude oil from their own production and from Venezuela and burn it directly in their power plants. And so that creates not just huge carbon emissions, but also emissions of tons of other bad stuff you don't want to burn. And that ends up coming very visibly out of the smokestacks. And the most prominent example in Havana is that just across the harbor is a gasoline refinery plant that was seized from Shell back at the beginning of the revolution. And it's still working, and it is spewing out of its smoke tech this giant fireball and a ton of black smoke that's just drifting over Havana every day. And so it literally is staring you right in the face that this is a extraordinarily antiquated and dirty system. It doesn't take much to make it better than the way it is right now.
Interesting. So
the other example is that as far as those 1950s autos you mentioned, they're very charming and they're the first thing that visitors to Cuba notice. But the other thing that they would notice is that the smell of exhaust is everywhere. Like those cars have they have 1950s emissions technology, which is basically non-existent. And so you get a lot of this ambient air pollution from the tailpipes of old cars.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have those old cars, and I understand a number of them are run also with old Soviet engines too. So that adds up to as well.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, what do you think in your reporting and your trip down there? Do you expect there to be a rush of Americans going down there trying to invest, trying to sell? Or, will we see big companies or small companies, or is this something that it's too early yet?
I think we're going to see a lot of companies putting out feelers and building relationships in anticipation of when they're able to invest. There are a lot of – the thing is that there are – We're already getting reports that, for example, Russia and China are aggressively pushing wind turbine technology on Cuba. And there's a very good possibility that other countries are going to steal a march on the U.S. and become the leading suppliers of energy technology to Cuba simply because they can. While Cuba's giant, economically robust neighbor of the North, the United States has its hands tied. And it's going to be interesting to see how whether energy players in the U.S. are going to start to lean on our government to allow them to do work there.
Yeah, interesting. Do you think I wonder if the Cuban expat community here in the United States and Florida would they be a part of this or an early driver of this this kind of bringing everybody back together?
I don't know a lot of the expat community in the U.S.
Okay.
What I'm hearing is that they are one of the main sources of resistance to the opening with Cuba. But also I'm hearing that some of them are enthusiastic. So it is interesting to see that in Havana, you'll be talking to a taxi driver and he'll say, "Oh yeah, Marco Rubio." No, hope he doesn't win it. They're watching our politics very closely, and they know who the enemies of a reapproachment are, and really hope they don't gain power.
So they're really, really invested in this and following it closely, and not just people in the government, but all the way
through.
Right,
right. Everywhere. Everyone is latched on to this opening with the U.S. as the thing that's going to bring them opportunity.
Interesting. Well, thank you. It sounds like we've got real opportunities here for coming together, but also real hurdles to what needs to be done. So with that, I think we'll close, and thank you for your time, and thanks for your great reporting. You know, please, everybody listening, follow David Ferris on Twitter at David Ferris, and watch for his reporting in Energy Wire. For today, this is the American Security Project, and I'm Andrew Holland. Thank you for listening.